Now we're holding on Ayin Aleph Amud Beis, 9 lines from the bottom. We learned yesterday about this whole matter of Tuma Blua and Tahara Blua. We said that Rabbah had started the Sugya on Ayin Aleph Amud Aleph, saying just as Tuma Blua is Matame, so Tahara Blua does not become Tame. Meaning, we said that Tuma Blua means you have something that's Tame embedded inside a person's body, or we talked about briefly yesterday, also inside an animal's body, for example, then it's not Matame. So an example that we had of that was in our Mishnah, when a woman has a stillbirth within her womb, Rahman al Islam. So now we said if the midwife sticks her hand in and touches it, she becomes tame, but meanwhile the woman herself remains tahor until the baby is born. Now we said it's not even a matter of that the reason why the mother is not tame is because it's called magarisa starim, that she's touching the baby only with the inside of her body, and that's not with a hidden part of her body, and that wouldn't be matame, because that wouldn't help us as far as tumas masa. That only helps as far as tumas maga, the tumor that one gets from touching something tame. In this case, we're talking about there would be tumas masa, because a dead body is matame by carrying it as well, even if you're not in direct contact with it. But what saves her is the fact that it's tumor blue. So Rabbah had said, the same way as Tuma Blua is not Matame, the same way he said Tara Blua does not become Tame, which we said meant, for example, that if a person swallows a ring and then goes into an oil on this, then the ring is not going to become Tame. It's inside an oil on this, but it's being saved by the fact that it's Blua, that it's hidden inside his body, therefore it's not Tame. And we discussed the derivation of that and so forth. So now the Gemara says Omar Rava. So Rava says, why exactly did Rav tell us that? Tavayu Tanani. The fact is, both these dinim we already learn in a Mishnah. Tuma Blua Tanena, Tara Blua Tanena. We learn in Mishnayos both about Tuma Blua and about Tara Blua. So what is Rav's chiddush? In particular, Tosfos explains the real question is not so much what's his chiddush, but Rabbah is saying kishem. Rabbah is saying it's a given that Tuma Blua is not matame, which that he can derive from the Mishnah. But why is he saying that? Why is he saying kishem? Just as it's obvious, as we know from the Mishnah, that Tuma Blua is not matame, so also we can derive that Tara Blua is not. It does not become tame. When that it equally well says in the Mishnah, and there's no reason for him to say kishem as though like it's obvious one, we have to derive the other one. Namely, Tuma Blua. Do we see the concept of Tuma Blua? So our Mishnah we'll get back to soon. But first, let's give another relevant Mishnah on this topic. Ditanan Bola Tabas Tmeya. Mishnah said if a person swallowed a ring that was Tame. Shitabuk Betzes has a note here that maybe the word should be tabas behema, of a ring that's used for an animal, which then it's not as makabal tumah, because in general things that are used for animals are not as makabal tumah. But in any case, the printed Gemara in front of us doesn't have the word behema. So just tabas smeya, it is a ring that previously became tumimess. So now, when he swallowed it, then at first it touched his lips. If he became tame, toivol v'oichol b'tase. Nevertheless, he can toivol. So now he doesn't become. Now it has to be tumas es, by the way, because you have a concept in halacha called cherev harehu kacholo. When a keli, or somebody showing him, say, specifically a metal keli, becomes tame, tumas es, then it's able to be matame a person just like the mess itself. As opposed to, for example, if this ring had become tame with some other kind of Rashi and Tosfos both point out, this cherev harehu kacholo, had it become tame with some other kind of tumah, then it wouldn't be matame the person anyway. So now again, Tosfos also points out that also if it wasn't for the fact of Tuma Blua, then toveling afterwards wouldn't help, because then he'd still be tame by carrying it, like we were talking before about the woman with the baby. In any case, so, okay, so the swallowed this Tommy ring, nevertheless, he can, so he has to go, he has to be sprinkled with potadrum water, and he has to toivel, but then at that point, he can eat truma, outside of Shemesh, even though the ring is still inside his stomach. there is actually a machlokas rishonim on that point, actually. Everybody agrees that he's tomei. Everybody agrees he's tomei for 7 days, but does he actually need to be sprinkled with potadrum or water? There's a machlokas about that. Be that as it may, the point is, in other words, that once he does tovel at the end of his tumas nes, then he can right away eat truma, even though the root is still inside his stomach. Now, continues the Mishnah. Hekia, if now he regurgitated the ring and it came out tmeya, then it becomes tamei. It didn't become tamei by him toveling in the mikveh because it's a foreign object inside his body, and it didn't become tamei with the didn't become tamei. It didn't become tamei with him toveling. So tmeya vitim atu, and it makes him tamei as it exits. Because then it touches him when he touches it, touches his body when he leaves it, when it leaves him. So therefore, so it's actually going to, so had it been, had we considered it, so in other words, it's tuma blua, but again, we don't say that it's tame the person as long as he's carrying it, and the fact, so because, precisely because tuma blua is not matame. So now the only thing is that, when he regurgitates, then it's going to touch his body as it comes out, and then therefore it's going to, then it's going to be metame him. So the point is, in other words, we see clearly in a Mishnah, this din of tuma blua not being metame. Now, Tosfos points out, and we just say that it's talking about one that became Tommy with the sheretz, and then we don't have a proof over here. And the answer is because first of all, the next case that we're going to talk about, Tabas Tahora, where the ring was Tahor, the next case that we're going to bring in the Gemara is the previous part of this Mishnah in Masech de Mikvos, and there it talks about Ohel HaMes, so clearly we're talking about Tumas Mes. And besides that, anyway, if it was from Sheretz, there would be nothing to talk about as far as it being Matami, the person, anyhow. So the point is, in other words, that we see that the tuma blua is clearly stated in a Mishnah. In that case, tara blua tanena. But to say that tara blua is also equally, it says very clearly in a Mishnah. And therefore, what is Rabba's point? Why is Rabba saying kashem? Just as tuma blua is matame, so also tara blua, as though it's less obvious. And we need to derive that when it also says that in a Mishnah, because the same Mishnah says the tanan bola tabas tahor. If the person swallowed a ring that was tahor, v'nichnas la'ol mes, and he went into an Ola mess, so therefore he became Tomei. Nevertheless, the ring did not become Tomei, the Hiza, the Shana. So now he got sprinkled with Hora Adruma water the first time and the second time, because a person needs to be sprinkled on the third day and on the seventh day. Toval. And he toveled, and had head of Shemesh, so now he's Tahor again. And he then regurgitated the ring. So it's exactly as it was before. It never became Tomei, because it was inside his body. And again, had it become Tomei, then it wouldn't have become Tahor from him toveling, because like we said before, in the first example that we brought, is it wouldn't have become Tahor by the toveling, because the water of the mikveh didn't touch it. So the fact that we're saying Harei Kamo Tahoisa, it remains as it was, means, in other words, it never became Tomei. So we see very clearly this point about that Tara Blua does not become Tomei. So why is Rabba making sound as though this is a chiddush of his that we couldn't have derived, that we couldn't have learned ourselves in a Mishnah? So the answer is Kikomer Rabba, you can shabola shtei tabois. The answer is that Rabba's chiddush is, for example, suppose a person swallowed two such rings, achas tmeya v'achas tahora. One of those rings, before he swallowed it, was tamei, and the other one was tahora. The chiddush is delematamilam tmeya l'tahora. The chiddush is that the tamei one does not make the tahor one tamei, even though they're touching one another. Because it's balua. As long as it's balua, it's not going to be able to be makabel truma. In other words, had we not said that, we would have said, basically, he explains,
had it. If it had just been the mission of where he swallowed a toe, where he swallowed a toy wing, then again you would have said the reason why it's not a problem is Maga Besa starting. But after all, and Rashi adds also that to be Matame Bemasa would only be when the Tumah comes out of something itself. So a person carries a mess, then it becomes Tumah. A person carries a Nevel, a person carries various other kinds of sources of Tumah, which themselves are Matame Bemasa. The mess himself, if he carries it, becomes Tumah, even if he doesn't touch it. But the wing would not. So therefore, so there's not going to be a problem of Tumas Masa over there. That's why we said before, when he regurgitates the ring, only then is he going to become Tomei, because then it touches his ball again. Meanwhile, though, had it in a case, and we wouldn't know from that Mishnah, a case of two wings. We could have argued, what do you mean Tumah Blua? In effect, the two wings are like they're both inside a container. Imagine you take a box and you put two wings in it, one Tomei, one Tohar. You're not going to say Tumah Blua. You're not going to say because of that the Tohar ring is going to remain Tohar. Of course not. It touches the Tomei ring inside the box, it becomes tummy. The same way, we would have thought that when they're in the person's stomach, we would have argued the same thing. Therefore, Rabba's Chiddush is that, nevertheless, no, you have a special din over here called Tumah Blua, and Tara Blua, and therefore the one that's tummy, and therefore not only the one that's tummy, not Matame him, but also, which there you could have argued, it's not Matame him because of Maga Besa Starim, but in addition, also, it's not even Matame the Tahor one, even though that's not an issue, of Maga Besa Starim, because that's an example of Tumah Blua. So there is in fact a certain Chiddush in what Rabba is saying. That's the point of Rashi. Tosfos discusses Rashi's explanation at some length and deals with different details about this, why exactly would one not be Matami the other? How does Rabba know this? And why indeed is it so that one is not Matami the other one? So in the end, Tosfos says, we learned about yesterday, the case where a person eats a piece of nevela right before Shkias Achama, and then he toibles and has head of Shemesh intact inside his body, and nevertheless it's not Matame him, even though nevela is one of those things, that's Matame B'masa, so we can say the same thing, and the same thing Rabba will generalize from that to this case of the two rings as well. Also, Tosfos points to another matter as well, as we talked about the case where a person swallows the tabas tmeya, and it takes him 7 days until he becomes tahor. By the time it reaches 7 days, Tosfos points out that realistically the ring is, it's going to be fairly close to being excreted at that point. So when he first swallows truma, it's going to take a while before it touches it. So you could say you could eat truma right away, because you could argue that it's going to take a while before the truma is ever going to touch the ring. But nevertheless, we're saying even on that, even this case of the two wings, where one of them is right next to the other in the stomach, nevertheless, one is not in the time of the other. Okay. So now that we understand... And now that we understand the chiddush of Rabba's statements, so now we have to let's relate that back to our Mishnah. So now you're telling me Rabba's chiddush is that when you have, again, this person had swallowed two wings, one is tahor, and we're saying the tahor one is not going to become tomei because it touches the tomei one because of tumah blua. But now let's go back to our Mishnah. You have the case of the dead baby in the womb, and we say, and the midwife who reaches in and touches the baby. That's the equivalent of twins, because the midwife until now was tahor. Yet you're telling me that the unborn baby, the dead unborn baby, is making the wife tame. So you see that tumah blua is matame. In other words, wouldn't you assume that the unborn baby is considered wouldn't you consider the unborn baby must be an example of tumah blua? If you're telling me that it's matame her, then it must mean the only reason the woman, the mother herself remains tahor is only the maga besa stardom. Had it been for a matter of blua, she would have become tame. But we would say,
And you can see, Balua is Matame anybody who touches it, such as the midwife, and the only reason, that's the only reason she remains Tahor is because it's touching her only in Ma'abes Hasdarim. Now, where Tosfos brings up the point, wait a minute, what about Tumas Masa? Fact is, again, she's carrying something dead. So Tosfos uses this as a proof for their previous explanation, where again they had a long discussion and a long explanation of what Rashi says, that the reason why they saw her is in fact of Tuma Blua. So she would be Tahor because of Blua, but the midwife is going to become Tame. By touching it. In any case, the point is, so you see the Shteta Bois thing doesn't work. The answer is Omar Rabba, so Rabba himself gives the answer to explain his Shita, Shiny Oba, Horrible Social Lotus, because with a baby it's different. It's eventually going to come out. Rabba, to begin with, learned his din from Nevela. Now, Nevela, once you eat it, it usually you're not going to regurgitate it. Usually it's digested, and by the time it gets excreted, it's no longer considered a Nevela. As we learned yesterday, it's not Rory Laguerre, and it may not even be Rory Lachilus Kel anymore. So it's not Matame. But on the other hand, a baby is normally going to come out intact. The point is a baby, normally is going to come out of the womb intact, so it wouldn't be considered Bolua. But when you have something that's swallowed and goes through the digestive system, that would be considered Bolua. But Rabba says, Uber Seifelotis, Tabas ain't Seifelotis. So what are you telling me, though? A baby is going to come out intact. A wing is not. A wing is also. A person swallows a wing is also going to end up excreting it, and it will be excreted intact. What's the difference? So Rava says, you want to know something. You're asking from our Mishnah, where on the face of it, the question is why the midwife becomes Tomei, touching the baby. Shouldn't it be considered Tuma Blua? You should know. We'll give you an answer that has something to do with Tuma Blua anyway. Know the answer for this. Umanu, when the Gemara interjects, who does Rava mean? By Pumpadisoi is Rav Yosef. Means Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef was actually one of Rabba's Rebbes, Rav Yosef, who was the head of the yeshiva in Pumbedisa, he knows the answer for this. The answer is, you should know something. The fact that the midwife, because Tame over here, is actually not Daraisa, because Daraisa, she would have remained Tahor because of Tuma Blua. But Midrabbanan, we make Kotame, for reasons that the Gemara will explain in a minute. So first of all, the Gemara asks, why this extra Loshen? My Einim Medivrei Torah Elam Medivrei Sofrim. Why do you have to say it's not from Divrei Torah, it's only from Divrei Sofrim? Of course, if it's from Divrei Sofrim, then it's not from Divrei Torah. By definition, something of Divrei Sofrim is not something from Minat Torah. It's interesting, actually, that you do find later on, for example, the Rambam sometimes seems to use Divrei Sofrim to refer to anything that the Chachamim learned with any of the Yud Gimel Midos. There are various places where the Rambam uses Divrei Sofrim for something which Mephoshim asks on him, what do you mean? It's clearly Daraisa, and they explain. It means that the Sofrim, the Chachamim, explain to us what the Torah is saying. But apparently in Gemara terminology it's never like that. Divrei Sofrim is always going to be a Gzeira or Takana Derabanan, and therefore the question is then why does Rabbi Yosef have to say Einim Divrei Torah? And the answer is Deloy Tema Al Libud Rabbi Akiva, because you might have argued without him saying that you would have argued that the on Mishnah is only according to Rabbi Akiva. Dama Uber Bimei Isha Tomei. Rabbi Akiva says, as the Gemara is going to quote soon, that an unborn baby in the mother's womb is actually Tomei on a Daraisa level. And is Matame the mother on a Daraisa level. So if Rabbi Yosef had not specified Eina Medivrei Torah, then he would have, if he said Medivrei Sofrim, then he might have meant, within Rabbi Akiva's opinion, in other words, our Mishnah is clearly not following Rabbi Akiva, because our Mishnah is clearly saying that as long as the baby is in the womb, the mother is not Tomei.
So, but if Rav Yosef had not specified Eina Medivrei Torah, we would have thought that maybe it means that our Mishnah is only acquainted, that our Mishnah is only acquainted about Teva, and that's why a midwife becomes Tame. So you would have thought. So in other words, he disagrees with this whole concept of Tumah Blua and Tara Blua. As far as, again, why is the mother Tahar? Because Maga Beis Stardom, because it's only touching her in a hidden area of her body. You would have thought that. The point is, though, Rabbi Yosef wants you to know it's not so. El afilu le Rabbi Shmuel. No, rather, our Mishnah can go even according to Rabbi Shmuel. Domo ubri me'ir Tahar, that the baby inside the mother's womb is Tahar, is not matami the mother. Nevertheless, we do Zera de Rabbanon. Nevertheless, we do make Zera de Rabbanon, that the midwife is going to become Tame when she touches it. So there is an explanation actually that Tosfos actually gives an explanation that even Rabbi Akiva does not completely disagree with the whole concept of Tumah Blua. They explain that it's only, for example, if the baby stuck out some limb. If the baby stuck out some limb, so it's not considered born yet, nevertheless, we'd still say that it's Matame at that point. If it's completely inside the womb, and then Tosfos learns even Rabbi Akiva would agree it's not Matame. And then Baal HaMor has yet another explanation. He explains that we're talking about the baby is completely inside the womb. Rabbi Akiva does agree, Tumah Blua, but he holds that the midwife is going to become Tame because he disagrees only with Rabbi Zin about the two rings. We said, well, we do have Mishnayos to tell us the concept of Tumah Blua and Tara Blua, and according to this way of looking at it, according to Baal HaMor's way of looking at it, Rabbi Akiva would agree with that concept. He would just, on the other hand, he would disagree of the to extend it all the way to the case that Rabbi said about the two rings, and then, as we said at the top of the Amud, the midwife and the baby are the equivalent of two rings, and therefore Rabbi Akiva would be Matame. But Rav Yosef wants you to know, our Mishnah is not following that way of looking at it. Our Mishnah is following Rabbi Shmuel, that even it is Tohu Raisa, but nevertheless there is a Tumah on midwife Midrabanan. Well, my timer, why is there that Tumah? Amar Rishia Gzeira Shema Yotzi Vlad Roshish, what's the proizer? Because we have to make a gzera, because the baby might stick out its head outside of the proger, outside of the cervix. Proger actually, strictly speaking, means the whole birth canal. We'll learn in Masechta Nida, Bez Chem, next year. We'll learn about the relevant anatomy over there. We have the Mishnah calls over there proger, which is the area from the cervix until the outer genitalia over there. So now the baby might stick out his head into that area, and then at that point it's already conformed. As we learned at the beginning of the Perek, we said that animals don't have such a proser because they don't have the thickness of the thighs to traverse, whereas a human baby does. In any case, the baby might stick out its head to that point, and then therefore it's considered born already. And now, when the midwife touches it, of course it's going to become Tumah. It's not Tumah Blua anymore. Now, the problem is, in other words, the midwife might misunderstand and think that the baby is, in fact, still inside, and she doesn't realize, as opposed to with the shepherd. Again, as we said, there's no proser. You don't have that thickness that the baby has to traverse, and therefore there's no problem of confusion like that, says Rashi. So the question is, Yehoche Ishanam, well, then the woman herself, we should make the same Zera. For the same reason, because she may also misunderstand at what point the baby has already reached a stage considered born, and now it's not Tumah Blua anymore. And the answer is Ishma Geshef Matzma. The woman herself is going to know the exact moment when the baby comes out, when the baby comes out of the womb, out of the cervix, and therefore we don't have to be concerned that she's going to be confused about one or the other. Well, the question is, well, then in that case, why doesn't she explain? Why doesn't she tell that to the Chaya right now? I just felt the baby. Right now, I just felt the baby exit my cervix, and now from now on, if you touch it, you're going to become Tame. And the answer is Tudida. She's busy over there. She's a little preoccupied with the birth. She may feel it for herself. I mean, you can't expect her to have the presence of mind to speak to the midwife at that point and tell her.
So therefore, we have reason to make a gzera that even though it could be considered tuma blua, if the baby still is in the womb, there's the concern it might have reached the stage where it's actually starting to come out of the womb and is not tuma blua anymore, and the midwife is not going to realize, and she's going to touch it. So we have a reason to make this gzera d'rabbanan. So we won't make the gzera on the mother herself because we're going to expect at what point she'll know at any given point where the baby is. But we're going to make the gzera on the midwife because she may not realize, and the mother is going to be too preoccupied with giving birth to tell her. Okay. The Gemara says, "My Rabbi Shmuel, the My Rabbi Akiva." What are the relevant opinions of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva that we were just referring to? So the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, the Pasuk says, V'chol asher yiga al pnei hasadeh. The Pasuk says, anything that touches a mess on the surface of the field. So in other words, it sounds like the Pasuk is saying that the mess has to be exposed, has to be open out in the field to be metame. Now, what does that mean? If there's a mess, is metame if it's under a cover as well. Rabbi Shmuel says that comes to exclude the case where baby is dead inside mother's womb. That divrei Rabbi Shmuel. That's what Rabbi Shmuel says. Rabbi Akiva says it comes to include the goylel and the doifik, which are various parts of the coffin of a mess. Rashi over here, and in many places in Shas, explains that goylel means the cover of the aron, and the doifik means the side pieces of the aron. So in other words, you're talking about the aron, the coffin is sitting open on the ground, and the point is, not only the mess is matame, but also the goylel and doifik are matame. In fact, so much so that the Gemara even mentions you even have you could have, for example, conceivably, normally a live animal, as we've learned before, is not makabel tumah, but you can have, if a live animal is being used as a goylel or a doifik temporarily, then that live animal is actually metame as long as a person touches it. Rashi explains that the goylel and the doifik means the cover and the sides, respectively. Tosfos and a number of Tosfos refers over here to an explanation of theirs in Ksubas, and they discuss this in a number of places in Shas, where it seems to imply that goylel and doifik are something else. So instead, Tosfos gives an explanation that the goylel would be the headstone, the matziva, the gravestone over the grave, and the doifik would be two things that hold it up. Sort of like you have nowadays, a matziva is usually built with a base. So then in that case, so you'd have that you put things, and the point is, sometimes conceivably you might use if you put up a temporary stone, and let's say, for example, the stone is not ready yet, so then you might put an animal over there. You might tie an animal over there as a temporary simon that there's a caver over here. So in that case, we're saying that animal is able to be metame. Yet another explanation that they have, goylel and doifik, is based on the way they used to bury mesim in the times of the Gemara, which is they would often have, we find it all over the place in Baba Basra and in other places, they would have niches in there. They would have burial caves, and they would have niches in the walls in which they would bury the mesim. They found examples of such things all over Eretz Yisrael. So now what would happen is that in order to close up, to close up the niche, they would roll a stone in place. So the girdle means to roll, and then you would have you think of, for example, when you're backing up a car, you need to chuck something under the wheels to keep the wheels from turning. So then those things, those chucks that you put underneath it to keep that from rolling away would be called doifik. So there was such an explanation also that girdle and doifik are those things. Be that as it may, the point is, Rabbi Akiva is saying, from the words Asher al-Pnei Asada, we learn from that the goylel and the doifik are matame. So now, in other words, the point is, but Rabbi Shmuel is saying that the words al-Pnei Asada come to exclude an unborn baby. Rabbi Akiva is using those words for a different drasha. Therefore, according to him, the unborn baby is in fact matame. Okay, so the question is, Rabbi Shmuel goylel the doifik. So what about according to Rabbi Shmuel? Where is he learning goylel and doifik from? He agrees that they're matame. And the answer is Hilchos Gemirah. Well, he holds that those things are tame by Achol Moshe Misinai, and you don't need a pasuk for that. By definition, when you say that something is Achol Moshe Misinai, means there's no pasuk for it, and we just learn
We just learn Ish Mipi Ish, going back to Moshe Rabbeinu, that this is what Hashem taught him. Okay. Fine. So Rabbi Akiva is saying that he doesn't use the pasuk for. Now, one thing is, by the way, that the Goel and Doifik is actually according to most Rishonim, when the Goel and Doifik are removed from where they were being used, then they're not Tomei anymore. Rashi actually learns that they're Tomei, that they're Matame later on as well. I mean, obviously, if there's something in the Kabbal Tumah, then obviously they need to become Tahar anyway. But one example is this matter of the animal. For example, once you removed it from being a Goel or a Doifik, then it's not Tumah anymore, because live animals are generally not Kabbal Tumah. In any case, fine. So Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel both agree that Goel and Doifik are Tumah, but the Machloikas is, why Rabbi Akiva is learning this from this Pasuk, and Rabbi Shmuel is, we're not learning this from this Pasuk, it's we're learning it from Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. Okay, so the question is, Rabbi Akiva, Ubi Meisha Tame. Now, Rabbi Akiva holds that, in fact, the unborn baby in the womb is going to be Tame. So according to him, the Pasuk is obviously not being Lamayit. But Midaraisa Menolet, how does Rabbi Akiva know that it's Tame on a Daraisa level? Rashi explains, in other words, the question is, fine, Pnei Asada is not being used to teach us about that, because he's using Goel of the Doifik, but the fact is, why can't he say that it means both? It means that only something that's exposed is Matame. So the Goel and Doifik, if you have, for example, an exposed coffin, the Goel and Doifik, again, according to Rashi, Goel and Doifik are parts of the coffin itself. We'd have to be talking about that the coffin itself is on the surface. According to Tosfos, that we're talking about the gravestone, and that's obviously exposed on the surface. And if you say this rolling stone and things that are used to chuck it in place, then those are also exposed on the surface. Fine, Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Akiva is a general point, says Rashi, that anything is going to be metame only if it's exposed, and therefore that excludes the uber b'meisha is not. So why can't he learn both things from it? So where does he in fact know that daraisa it is in fact metame? So Amar Rabbi Amar Kro, because the pasuk is hanegea b'meis b'nefesh. The pasuk also says, the previous pasuk says, a few pasukim earlier, it says hanegea b'meis b'nefesh, a person who touches in a soul. Now what's b'meis b'nefesh? Why that double question? So Ezeho meis sheb b'nefesh shaladam. So where do you have a meis in the nefesh, in the life of a person? Heve'em ezeh ober sheb meisha. Then necessarily that must be a baby inside the mother's womb. With the same way as, for example, the beginning of the parak, we learned from the fact that the Torah says ba behema oisatechelu, and we learned from that the concept of that when you shecht the mother animal, the baby becomes mutter to eat, because you said ba behema means within the animal. Well, the same way over here when it says bin meis bin nefesh. Then Rabbi Akiva is going to say that means bin nefesh means within the nefesh. So therefore that's where Rabbi Akiva learns it from. Okay. Fine. Rabbi Shmuel, now what is Rabbi Shmuel answer to that? The answer is Haimi Boiler Lirvius Dam Abomin Ameshmatama. Rabbi Shmuel is gonna use that same pasuk to teach us that a revius of blood that comes from a mess, that's matame. So you have, in other words, a person died, and then blood dripped out of him after he died. So then you should know that blood is also going to be metamet chumas mes. Why? Because the pasuk says, and it shenema hanegeba meis benefesh adam. The pasuk says, one who touches a mess in the soul of a person. Veizeo nefesh shel adam shemetame. Now, what does nefesh mean? So the nefesh is, of course, something intangible. So what do we mean? Well, as the Torah tells us in a few places, ki adam hua nefesh. The blood is the soul. So the heviyem is the revius dam. Therefore, you must say it refers to a revius, which the Gemara mentions in a number of places, that a revius is the minimum amount of blood that a person could live with. It's hard to say, because I mean, if a person was down to a revius, which is only a couple of ounces, they would long since have died of shock. Tosfos says specifically it means there's a like the very concentrated blood in the heart. In other words, if you think of it, if you have just the amount, the minimum amount of blood that the heart could contain, obviously you have to have blood in the rest of the body for the person to live. But in other words, the point is there's that concentrated essence of it, sort of. And in halacha, therefore, we say that a revius of blood is considered to be the minimum that would be necessary for human life. Well, therefore, Rabbi Shmuel is learning from the words Hanagei b'meis b'nefesh that it means that it means Revius Dam Abamin Ames Shematama. Kenema Hanagei b'meis b'chol b'nefesh Adam Ezo Nefesh Adam Shematama Ebeim is a Revius Dam. So therefore, so he's using the pasuk for that. So he can't use it for an unborn baby. Now, Rabbi Akiva, what about Rabbi Akiva? What is the answer to that? Well, the Taimei, he's going according to his shita, Dama af revius dama ba mishne meisim betama ba'oihel. He says that actually it doesn't need to be a revius of blood from one single person. It's enough, even Rabbi Akiva says that if the revius came from a combination of two meisim, so each one, you have an eighth of a log from each one, and together they make up a revius, Rabbi Akiva holds that in fact that is going to be metame ba'oihel as well. So you see, it's not a matter of nefesh or adam, because that revius is from two different people, and it wouldn't have been enough to keep either one of them alive. The Tanya, as in fact we learn in a brayser, about kivon, I mean, nayim revius dam, abo mishne meisim shem tamim ba'oil. How do we know that a revius of blood that comes from a combination of two people is metamim ba'oil? Because the pasuk says about a kohen that he should not come into a place where there are nafshois, the souls in plural, mace. That means shtei nefashos. If shir echad, it means you have two lives over there, but there's only one. There's only one shir. So mace does mean a revius. The Kiva agrees with the point of revius, but because it says nafshois in the plural, then it means that you have two people, two souls that contributed to this amount of a revius, and that's enough to be metame. Bala Turim on the pasuk points out an interesting thing. That pasuk, you have every two words in it end with same letter. Va'al kol, so they both end with lamed. Nafshois mace, two duffs. Loy yavoi, two aleph's. Lo aviv le'imoi, two vav's. Loy yitama, two aleph's. So you have every pair of words, and that pasuk ends with the same letter. So Bala Turim says there's a hint for Rabbi Akiva's din that the revius of blood doesn't even have to be from one mes; it can be from two different mesim, and it's still matame. So that's what he's learning from that pasuk. From that pasuk, the mesim. So therefore he holds that in fact that it would be metame, so he can't learn from the mace nefesh that a revius is metame only if it's from one person, because he says the other pasuk contradicts that. Therefore, he uses the mace nefesh to teach us about the unborn baby. Meanwhile, Tosfa says, Rabbi Shmuel is going to hold, yesh eim l'masoras. The fact is, we have to look at the masoras, at the way it's actually written in the Torah, where it's written without the vav, and it says, we read it nafshos with a cholam, but it's written in the Torah without, and therefore it can be read nafshas, which means one soul. So therefore, you don't have the pasuk telling you. So therefore, according to Rabbi Shmuel, you would not say that a revius from two mesim is metame, and it's only metame if it comes from one mes. And therefore, he's using the pasuk the mes benefesh adam to learn that point. Okay. So as we trace it through the different psuk and everything, then it comes out that Rabbi Shmuel has a basis for saying that an unborn baby in the mother's womb is not metame, whereas Rabbi Akiva has a source for saying that it is. But now we're saying in our Mishnah, when we say that the midwife is tame, it's not only according to Rabbi Akiva, even according to Rabbi Shmuel, he would agree that she's tame on a derabanan level for the reason that we said before, because the baby might have stuck out its head into the prosder, and the midwife doesn't realize, and the mother does. Getting back now to cases of animals and their babies, we digress with this Mishnah to talk about human mothers and their babies again, because once we had the previous case where the baby was dead in the mother animal's womb, then we talked about the case where a human baby is dead in its mother's womb, even though that kind of thing mainly belongs in Masechta Nida or in Seder Taris in general. Now getting to animals and their babies. The Mishnah says, "Behema hamakasha leilad." You have again an animal that is having a hard time giving birth. V'hutzi uberas yodei, and so the baby stuck out its foreleg or any body part. V'choscha, and then you cut it. And you cut it off. V'achakach shachat tesimay, and then you shechted the mother. Now, the piece that came out before, we learned before, at the beginning of the parak, is also because Basa Basada Trefa, once it came out of Mitzvah Mechitza, then it's considered Trefa. Now, that piece, in addition, is also going to be Metame. If the baby is alive, then it's Eivah Menachai, and as we're going to learn later on in the Masechta, Eivah Menachai is Metame. If the baby is dead, then the piece is also going to be Tame as Nevela. Actually, a discussion about that, is it in fact considered Eivah, is it considered Eivah Menachai, or is it considered Eivah Menames? Whatever the case, the point is that Rashi uses the expression over here that the piece itself is going to be Rashi says over here actually what it is if the baby is alive, then again it's Eivah Menachai, and if the baby comes out dead, then fine, the Eivah is Nevela, then it's 100% Nevela, because the mother's shchita was not Mataharet, didn't make it able to be eaten. So in any case, so now Basar Tahor, the meat of the mother and of the baby are both Tahor. Because the piece that you cut off is tummy. But live animals are not makabel tumah, and therefore, since you cut it off before you shechted the mother, meaning, in other words, at the time of the shechita, the baby, the rest of the baby that's in the womb was not touching this piece anymore, then therefore it wasn't able to be makabel tumah, and therefore there's no tumah on the remaining meat at all. So that, again, the piece that you cut off is going to be Eivah Menachai, or Eivah Menames, or Nevela, as the case may be, so it'll be matame, but the rest of the unborn baby will not. What about though if you did the other way around? What if you first shechted the mother and only then you cut off that part? So now the rest of the meat of the baby is going to be considered that it touched Nevela. Because at that point, then you can't say that it's not alive anymore, that it shouldn't be makabel tumah. So now, at this point, again, the rest of the meat of the unborn baby is going to have touched Eivah Menachai, or Nevela, as the case may be. Now, Eivah Menachai has a din of Nevela, as far as tumah v'tahara, for the most part, as we mentioned before. Later in the Masechta, we're going to talk about there is a slight difference between Eivah Menachai and Nevela as far as tumah, but basically they have the same degree of tumah. So now, in other words, Rashi says if the baby is dead, then literally it's maga nevela, in a sense that that limb itself is considered nevela, and the rest of the baby animal touched it. Now, in the previous case, Tosfos points out that actually, even if the baby was dead in the womb, nevertheless, the shechita of the mother is metaharet, as long as it's in the womb, it's considered part of the mother, and therefore, again, it's not going to be makabel tumah, because even though it itself is dead, it's considered of the live mother. But here we're talking about once you shechted the mother, and now both mother and baby are dead, as far as halacha is concerned, and now, so now they're able to be makabel tumah, and now they're touching, they touch this piece, as it was being cut off before, as being cut off, and therefore it's considered that it touched Nevela. Divrei Meir, that's what a Meir says. But Chum say, Maga Treifa Shchuta. It's not going to be that bad. It's only the equivalent of, it's only the equivalent of that it touched Treifa, which was Shechted. Meaning, in other words, now when you shecht an animal that's shefa, forget about the cases of pregnant animals, a regular animal that's shefa, and you shecht it, obviously you can't eat it afterwards because it's shefa, but nevertheless the shchita helps that at least it's not metame to the same degree as nevela. So therefore, the Chachamim are saying, again, it's true that the shchita is not matter, this part that came out, because it's considered uvos sada treifa. Nevertheless, though, all it is it's going to have only the status of treifa, and therefore it's not going to be metame on so midaraisa. It's not going to be metame at all. Midrabanan, and it's going to be metame kodshim that touch it. So in other words, if it's chulin, you have no problem, and only if the animal was kodshim is there even a problem. Okay. And the Chacham explain why are we saying it's only Maga Treifa Shchuta? Because they say, Mamatzinu, well, let's consider. We can draw an analogy. Mamatzinu b'Treifa, consider the case of a regular animal that's Treifa, Sheshchitosim b'Taharta. that shechting it is metaharit, in the sense that it doesn't have tumas nevela anymore, even though you can't eat it because it's a teifa, but nevertheless, you can still, at least it's not, at least it doesn't have the tumah of nevela anymore, as the Mishnah will go on to prove. Actually, it's the tyrus eva, the same way, shechting a mother animal should be metaharit. This limb that stuck out. True, the limb itself is also, but nevertheless, because Basavasada Trefa, but nevertheless, we can't say that, nevertheless, we can't say that it should be considered Nevela or Ezeman Achai like you wanted to consider it, Rameir. Omo Lahem Rameir, but Rameir says, Loi, no, that's not really a valid comparison. Imkir, Shchitas Trefa, Oisa, you know why the Shchita of a Trefa is Metaharit? And makes it that it doesn't have too much nevela. Dovah shegufa, because there you have the shechita had to happen with the actual body of the animal itself. So fine, the very animal that was shechted is now no longer has too much nevela. But to tire the aver dovah sheni gufa, how could we tire this limb that stuck out, which is not part of it? So therefore, it should still have the din of nevela or of aver menachai. It's basically the same thing. So the mayor argues it's not really a good comparison. In the end, the Gemara is going to end up talking about that. The Gemara is going to end up talking about basically the question is: does Shechita make it that this piece is going to be considered that it fell off beforehand? We're going to talk about Shechita Oisa Nipple. We're going to be talking about the next. We're going to be talking about over the next couple of dafim. Now Tosfos also points out at the bottom of the previous Amud that if the person touched it before Shechita, then there's no question. He's not Matame. But over here we're talking about that. But Tosfos discusses it also in terms of what we learned before the Machlokas Rabbi Yosi Aglili and the Chachamim if it's a behemoth tmeya. Anyway, but the point is, in other words, that here we're saying. So here, Meir is saying that fine, I agree the shchit and the metahar, the animal itself, so it doesn't have tumas nevela, but that shouldn't extend all the way to the saver. Mishnah says, fine, let's first deal with, that's the Meir's argument. So now the next piece of the Mishnah, some of the Mefarshim, the Rambam is going to explain that the next couple of lines are actually a continuation of Reb Meir's argument. Reb Meir is going to say, look, how after all do we learn that Shchita is Matar and Nevela anyway, is Matar of Terefa anyway? And once we do that, then we should see that that's not going to extend to this case. The other way of understanding is that the next part of the Mishnah is just explaining what everybody agrees to. Everybody agrees, the premise that everybody seems to agree to is that Shchita will in fact be Matar of Terefa. Machlokas is whether it extends to this limb of the unborn baby or not. So now the Mishnah is going to deal with how we know that point itself. How indeed do we know that the shchita of a trefa makes it tahar and does not have tumas nevela anymore? So like this, behemoth me'as surabachila, we know there are two kinds of cases where you can't eat an animal. One is where it's behemoth me'a, a non-kosher species, like a horse or whatever, and then you have a trefa. Both of those, the Torah says, they're osti, where we can make a mamatzinu, we can make a binyan ab between ma behemoth me'a in shetosim etaharita. With a non-kosher species, then if you shecht it, it doesn't make a difference. If you take a horse and shecht it, it doesn't matter. It still has the exact same din of nevela, and the carcass of it is still matan person who touches who carries it. Doesn't matter that it underwent shchita because shchita is not relevant when it comes to a behemoth meya. So now you would think then Rashi brings from Torah Skoinim, from the Medrash Halacha Yikra, how we learn that point exactly, that the Gemara learns it over there from Sukkim, that a behemoth tmeya doesn't matter whether you shecht it or not. Well, you would think after Trefa, loy tatara and a shchita, you would think then the same thing that the Trefa, a shchita should not help to be matara, because it's equally well. You're not allowed to eat it, so maybe shchita should not help for it as well. So how do we know that not, as the Mishnah is going to go on to say? Now Shaw brings up over here that the drosha Rashi brings over there, the exact drosha that Rashi brings does not actually work so well with the Tana of our Mishnah, which distinguishes between, in our Mishnah, we're going to end up saying in our mission a case of a not fully developed baby yet, where Shitta is not necessarily matara. But there's Ashra points out that the drasha that Rashi is bringing over here wouldn't necessarily fit with our Mishnah, which is better with the Braisa that we're going to learn later on. But anyway, okay. So after all, so we would have thought to say that look, the same way as a behemoth does not lose the tumor of Nevela by Shchita, neither does a Tshefa. How indeed do we know that not? So, and the answer is loy. After all, you can't say that because the difference is imamarta behemoth tmeya shalot hoyis talo shasa kosher. Because you can say it's one thing. As far as a behemoth tmeya, a horse doesn't have a shasa kosher. There never was a time when it would have been eaten. After all, you know, a horse is a horse, and then there's no way to make it tahor. So how could you compare it to a trefa which didn't have a shasa kosher? There was a period of time when a trefa would have been mutter to eat had you shechted it at that time before it became a trefa. Well, if you're going to argue like that, though, the problem is toil chamashe evesa. Then take away that argument. That's not necessarily enough of an argument. Haresha know the trefa min abeten. What happens if an animal is born trefa and it never had shasa kosher? Here we're saying that the Torah is saying. Now, in other words, you could argue like this. In other words, the point is that the Torah tells us there are certain species of animals that are kosher to eat, and the Torah tells us that you have to shecht those. So you could argue that when you have an animal that was in the category of being shechted, it was a kosher animal, and it could have been shechted and eaten, the fact that later on in its life it becomes trefa doesn't take away the ability that now shechita has to take away the tumah of nevela from it. Very well, but the Mishnah continues. But you can also take away, remove that argument of yours. In other words, even if we accept that argument, what about how you should know the Tereifa Minan Bekin Minayin? And what about if the animal were born congenitally Tereifa? Then you don't have that. Because after all, it never had a shasa kosher, so therefore you could argue it never was in the shchita, never would have been relevant to it. And maybe in fact we should say that now if you shecht such a trefa, it won't lose its tumah. It'll still have tumas nevela the same way as if you shecht a horse. Why indeed not? Now an interesting thing that Rishonim bring up is because wait a minute, even if it's born in trefa, it had a shasa kosher because you could have shechted the mother with the baby inside, and then the baby would have been mutter. So in fact, the Rav Yah, one of the great Rishonim, learns that in fact actually that no, if the baby is trefa, then it wouldn't become mutter with the shchita with the shchita of the mother. But the other way of looking at it, though, the Rav Yo goes on to say, the Urzarua brings that no, the difference is, in other words, that when shasa kosher means when it could have become mutter through its own shchita, not that it would just become mutter through its mother's shchita. In any case, the point is that. Harish should know the today from an abetin minayin. How indeed do we know that if you were to shecht such an animal that it wouldn't have tumas nevela? We don't seem to have a valid ironclad proof every time that a trefa that you shecht it should in fact not have tumas nevela. Maybe you should say, fine, maybe if the animal developed a trefa later in life, maybe you could say that. But if it was born with a trefa, why indeed shouldn't we consider it the equivalent of a horse or a camel or anything like that, and say that if you shecht it, it doesn't make a difference and it still has tumas nevela? But Mishnah continues, loy. Still not a valid comparison. Because one thing you can say as far as a behemoth tmeya, shekein ein b'mina shchita. That whole species is not subject to shchita. Toyma b'trefa sheyesh b'mina shchita. How could you compare it to a trefa where, after all, other ones of that, other members of that species, shchita does apply to them. So therefore, you can argue, therefore, that shchita will take away the tumor of trefa. In other words, uh, so 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 uh,
So fine. So we don't. So in other words, now having gone through the whole discussion, and it's a bit unusual for a Mishnah to do this. Usually, the Mishnah just gives us the bottom line halacha and not the whole discussion that leads to it. You have the actual discussion, but it comes out. In other words, from this discussion, we have no reason to say that a behemoth treifa should be any way like a behemoth tmeya, and therefore that shchita shouldn't apply to it. Well, therefore we can assume that shchita does apply to it and makes it tahor from tumas from tumas nevi. And on the other hand, so in that sense, even a treifa, even a congenital treifa is not. The Rambam, again, has a whole different understanding of the last few lines. He explains that all of it is actually part of Reb Meir's argument. Reb Meir, again, is saying that when you have this limb that's stuck out of the baby animal, that it shouldn't become tahor just because you shechted the mother. It should still be considered nevela, and the rest of the meat that touched it should also be nevela. So the Rambam learns that this whole part over here, this whole thing is part of Reb Meir's argument that piece never had shas kosher. Because there was no time in the baby's own life, independent of his mother, when this piece would be mutter. So in other words, he's telling them, once we both agree on the basic point that there has to be a difference whether it had shas kosher or not, and at least you could say, even by congenital treifa, you still have to consider whether there is b'minoi shchita or not, So that's the thing. So the mayor says to them, wait, shasa kosher or not shasa kosher, then in that case, this limb never had shasa kosher, why should it be mutter? And the chachamim answer back to him, with this loy, that they're telling him no, because you have to realize there is another consideration as well, b'mina shchita or ain b'mina shchita. And the fact is, this unborn baby is b'mina shchita, it is of a species to which shchita is relevant. And therefore, even if this particular limb didn't have chasa kosher, then it doesn't matter. Okay, so we have that machlokas of Reb Meir and the Chachamim, which over the next few days, over the next few dafim, Bez Hashem, we're going to analyze the machlokas in detail. But now the Mishnah continues. Now, what about though ben shmoina chai? Now, what about though if the baby is after an 8-month pregnancy and was born normally? Now, as we've learned before, as far as human babies, the Gemara takes it as a given throughout Shas that a human baby born in the 8th month is not going to be viable because it's premature, unless it happens to be a 7-month one that was born late, which elsewhere talks about how we would know that. Well, with kosher animals, you have large kosher animals, cattle, have the same length of pregnancy as human beings. Their pregnancies are also approximately 9 months, as opposed to cattle and sheep. As opposed to sheep and goats, where it's 5 months. So here we're talking about 8 months, meaning for cattle, it would be the same kind of thing with sheep and goats after 4 months. So now, if the baby was born alive after in the 8th month, where they would consider that it's not viable, so then, ain shchitas mitaharta, then the shchita will not be mitahara, lafisha ain b'mino shchita, because its species is not considered something that's subject to shchita. In the sense that, in other words, even though it belongs to a species, it is a cow or sheep or goat, which is from a kosher species, but nevertheless, it's not considered because it's born not viable, it's considered in effect. It's not considered, as Rashi says, part of Bokar Vatsan. It's not considered part of the species of Bokar Vatsan, and therefore the shchita is not going to be metachar. Later on, the Gemara is going to spend several dafim over here analyzing our Mishnah. Eventually, it'll be the day after tomorrow. Bez Hashem, we'll talk about why indeed not. Why should we consider that this baby, just because it was born unviable, why should we consider it a different species? So we'll get to that in a couple. We'll get to that in a couple of days. But first, we'll deal with the beginning of our Mishnah. The Gemara says, first of all, amai. Now, in the first case of our Mishnah, where, again, you're talking about that you have the case, again, the baby stuck out of a limb before the shchita, and then you only cut it off after the shchita. So now we said, so we have the machlokas of what the status of that aver is, and therefore how it affects the rest of the meat. Is it considered nevela, according to Reb Meir, or is it considered treifa shchuta, according to the Chachamim? If it's nevela, it's metame the rest of the meat. Midaraisa, and if it's treifa shchuta, then it's metame only the Rabbanan, only as far as Kodshim. The first question is, though, am I tumas beis astorim? Isn't this a case of tumas beis astorim? Because the point at which that part of the leg is attached to the rest is a hidden place. It's not, it's inside the thickness of the leg. And that's not visible. The Tuma space of stardom lay matame. And as we've been learning before, Tuma space of stardom is not matame. Why should we say that it's matame? Should we say then that Reb Meir, who says that it's matame, is actually going according to his shita, where he holds that tumas beis stardom is matame? Actually, that we would actually say that even when the point of contact between one thing or another is in a hidden place, Reb Meir would hold that it is actually matame. We would have to say, maybe, says the Ramban, that fine, you have, even Chachamim in our Mishnah would agree with him about that, about Tumas Beis HaStardom being Tameh, and they're just arguing with him on other grounds, whether it's considered Nevela or Treif HaShchuta or whatever. But we should say that Meir and the Chachamim of our Mishnah at least are going according to a Shita that says that even Tumas Beis HaStardom is Tameh. The Tanan, namely, we learn in a Mishnah, Shloisha al Shloisha, if you have a piece of cloth 3x3 Tvachim, which is considered to be the smallest piece that can be matame tumas midras. Tumas midras is when a zov sits or leans or steps or whatever on something, which is normally used for services, and then it's matame, as we had in the Mishnayos for Yortzeit and for the 11 months, Shlosha Sinhain. That whole peret is built on that concept of things that are matame tumas midras, because they're meant for sitting or sleeping or whatever on, versus things that are not. A piece of cloth, 3x3 tefachim, is considered to be the minimum that's matame tumas midras. Because that's the minimum size that a person is going to sit on. So shenechlak, suppose now that piece of cloth is cut or ripped in two. Tohar min midras. So at that point, it's tohar from being tumas tumas midras because none of the pieces are big enough to sit on anymore. Aval tumim magam midras. However, it has a lesser degree of tumah. It won't be an avat tumah anymore, but it will be a rishon tumah because it touched midras, because each part was touching the other part. So therefore, for that, you don't need 3x3 tefachim to become tumah in general. You have cloth can become tumah with only 3x3 etzbois, which is much less. A tefach is 4 etzbois. Rashi points out from other Gemaras that poor people can use it as patches. A poor person would use such a thing as a patch for his clothing, for example. So therefore, it's still able to be mekabel tuma. So Reb Meir, that's what Reb Meir says. Therefore, so it's a tamei tumas midras. It can't if a zav were to sit on it, it wouldn't become an avat tuma. But it would still be a rishon l'tuma because as it was being whipped, then each part touched the other part. Divrei Reb Meir. Vitanya. Now we learn in a braisa. Actually, Masoras Hashas points out that the word Vitanya doesn't belong over here because it's actually a continuation of in Mishnah. Anyway, so Rabbi Yossi says, "B'chibet a midras nogazeh." What do you mean? It didn't touch anything of midras. What do you mean? Each part touched the other part. That must be a stardom. The point within the cloth, where one part touches another part, is all within the thickness of the cloth itself. That's chaga beis hastarim. So where's the maga beis hastarim over here? And Tosfos points out, you would have to say, according to Rabbi Yossi, when it became Tomei Midras in the first place, you would have to say that there was something in between the Zov's foot, for example, and the Beged. Because after all, what do you mean, how did it become Tumas Midras? The fact is that the Zov touched it with his foot. If he was barefoot, or even if he had shoes on, then fine, you'd have he touches the shoe, which in turn that and it's all the Vasachas. So Tosfos points out that when Rabbi Yossi is arguing, how did it become Tumas Midras? How did it become Maga Midras? Then it would have to be that the zov touched it with some kind of thing that's not makabel tumah in between them. And then Tosfos further on points out also that if the clothing is folded, for example, then yeah, of course you have one part, one fold of it touches another one. But Rabbi Yossi is asking, what midras did it touch after all? The fact that it touched within the thickness of the cloth is not reason enough to be metameh. Rabbi Yossi explains, what it means is, rather, if a zov touched the cloth when it was intact,
Then she hates Tomei Magazov. Then sure, it'll be Tomei from the fact that a Zov touched it, which Rashi says. Let's say the Zov was barefoot, or for example that he was wearing shoes, but afterwards he touched it with his finger or something. So then therefore, so he made it a Rishon LeTumah. Besides, for making it Tumas Midras, and then sure, it's still going to have Magazov. Tosfos points out, by the way, that on the face of it, it became Tomei Maga Midras. If it became Tomei Midras, which is a more severe degree of Tumah, how can it also get a lesser degree of Tumah? They have a concept called Sova Tumah, that sometimes something becomes full of Tumah, but nevertheless, we're saying that that we're talking about, let's say it happened at the same time. He touched it at the time when he was stepping on it, like Tosfos had said before, he was barefoot, or for example, that Rashi had said that he was barefoot, or for example, he touched it at the same time. Whatever the case, the Rabbi Yossi says, fine, if the Zov actually touched it, then yeah, it'll be Tomei from the touch of the Zov. But the fact that one part of the cloth touched another within the thickness of the cloth, Rabbi Yossi says, that doesn't matter. Well, only Rabbi Meir holds that it matters. So it seems our Mishnah would be only according to Rabbi Meir when we're talking about the fact that in the thickness of limb, that the part that stuck out touched the rest of it, is Matame would seem to be according to Rabbi Meir. And the answer is, the Gemara says, no, Lav Itman Allah, don't you know, there was said in the base Medrash about that. Ula, lo shonu ela shloishah shloishah shenechlach. The whole machloikas of Rabbi Yossi and Meir is only when the piece was exactly 3x3 tefachim. So now, when you rip it, that no part is able to be mekamo, is able to be tomei midras anymore. Because by definition, to be able to tomei midras, it has to be 3x3 tefachim. But if it was 3x3 coming from a much larger garment, so even if you cut all pieces from it, you still have enough to be matami midras, then Rabbi Yossi would agree. B'shas p'shasan me'avien, kabbalas tumah me'avien. At the moment when they're being separated from the larger piece of cloth, then at that point, which that larger piece is able to be mekabel tumas midras, because it's more than 3x3, at that point it's able to also be metame, the smaller piece that's cut off, that's able to be metame, the smaller piece that's cut off of it. Well, therefore, our Mishnah, in fact, can work according to Rabbi Yossi as well. You don't have to say that it's specifically according to, you don't have to say that it's specifically only according to the mayor. So Honami, the same thing over here. B'shas p'shas and me'aver, makabel tumah me'aver. The same way over here. As that piece is being cut off of the aver, then it has a point. As it's coming off, it receives tumah that aver, because there you have, as you're cutting through, more and more of the place where they were connected together is exposed. So it's not magabes. Okay. So that's one answer. So that's one answer to say, oh, a Mishnah would work not only according to the mayor, but even according to the Chachamim. Ravina gives another answer. Beged lav l'chaticha koi, a piece of cloth is not necessarily meant to be cut. So therefore, you can consider, as long as it's still all connected, then it's still considered maga basis starim, and only the mayor would hold that. It's metame. But in the case of the baby over here, that piece is going to have to be cut off, because after all, that piece, as we've been learning throughout the parak, is also to eat. And we can say whatever is destined to be cut off, kachosuch dami, can be considered as though it was already cut off. So therefore, now you have it, it's going to be cut off, and right now they're touching each other, and therefore we're not going to call it maga basis starting. Now, the Gemara still points out, that still seems to be only a point of mayor, command for the mayor. Still, that seems to be only like the mayor. The Tanan, kol yodas hakelim shein aruchos, you have a handle of a keli that's longer than it needs to be, but also lakatatzon, and eventually you're going to chop it off. Makbilad mokamida, do it a mayor. So the mayor says, all you have to do is tovel, when you're toveling this keli, all you have to do is tovel until the point where you're going to cut it off. The whole thing. So in other words, your mayor would hold the part that you're going to cut off is considered already cut off. Now Tosfos wonders, shouldn't it still be considered a chatzitza? So Tosfos answers that, let's say you're talking about the handle is made of, let's say for example, it's like a chain made of different links, where one of them doesn't prevent water, where one of them being on doesn't prevent the water from reaching the rest of them. So therefore there'd be no chatzitza. Then there's another answer Masar Sashas brings over here from the Rosh, that by Kalim we don't care about Beis HaStarim, we don't care about Chatzitza like that. In any case, the Ran gives another answer, a Chatzitza would be a problem only if you're Makbid on it, and here you do plan to cut it off, but it's not considered Makbid, because you do want it to still be there at the time of the Tevila. By the way, though, that doesn't apply. Let's say, for example, you have a sticker on a kavi. When you come to the table, you do have to remove the sticker. Here we're talking about those specific as far as a handle. Anyway, the mayor says it's enough to just table until that point, but I don't say you have to table the whole kavi. So you see that the mayor holds that if you have something that's going to be cut off, it can be considered as though already cut off, but the Chum disagree. So why should we say over here in our Mishnah that because the limb is going to be cut off, therefore we should consider as though it already is? And the answer is, I feel the tamer rabbanan, and you could even say that this part of the Mishnah is according to the Chachamim, according to the Ravina's answer, because chibur ha'ochlin kamad mifrasi dami. When you have food connected together, it can be considered as though it's already cut apart, because food is soft and it's something that you're going to cut off. Rashi points out there's other places in Shas where the Gemara uses that expression that Ravina would hold, that chibur ha'ochlin kamad mifrasi dami, so we get it from our Gemara over here. So Ravina will hold that automatically food is already considered to be cut up already. And therefore they're touching one another, and therefore you could say that the part that's outside the part that's stuck outside the womb, which is osur, is now going to be considered touching the part that's inside, because we're talking about food as opposed to before we were talking about cloth. Okay, well, one thing we need to deal with, Bishlema la'ulah and katani chasma. According to Ula, it's easy to understand why our Mishnah specifically mentions that he cut it off. Because if he didn't cut it off, then in fact it wouldn't be a problem of maga beis starting. El Ravina Mai Choscha, but according to Ravina, why specifically mention when you cut it off? We said it's considered cut off already. And the answer is fine. I did turn a Reisha Choscha, because earlier when the Mishnah described the case where you cut it off before the Shechita, and there we said that there's no trauma involved because the baby is alive, and then the baby is alive on its own, or it's considered part of the mother, which is alive, and therefore there's no problem of trauma. So there it had to mention Choscha, Tananami Sefer Choscha, therefore in the Sefer, it also mentioned Choscha that he cut it off, even though according to Ravina, in that case it wouldn't really matter whether we cut it off anyway, because we would say that food is considered, command mifrisi is considered, that food is considered as though it's always separated to begin with.